no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. On this episode of the Relic Radio Show, we'll begin with Favorite Story and The Bet, their story from March 5th, 1949. After that, it's Suspense and A Murderous Revision, their episode from October 13th, 1951.
This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. The man named Anton Chekhov was a great playwright, the Russian Shakespeare, they called him, and a master of the short story. He was a gentle soul, with an unusual understanding of the heart of man. And in this week's favorite story, you'll find he proves himself a great searcher after truth. Charles Boyer selected Chekhov's The Bet as his favorite. Claude Sweeten has added the unusual instrument called the theremin to his orchestra, and John Beale and William Conrad are our leading players. Here's Act One of The Bet. Square of light in the corner of the garden. It is the window of a gardener's cottage, woven across with vines which show black against the square of light like veins in the hand of an old woman. There is no moon. The garden looks like a jungle in the starlight. It wasn't always so, for there was a time when this estate had gardeners to care for these grounds. But there are no gardeners now. So the vines and plants and shrubs have overgrown each other and covered the little cottage, all four walls. Even the door is laced across with intertwining vines. Yet, there is a light inside. There is a candle burning inside that garden cottage. And there must be someone there who lit the candle. We can't see him. The window is too high up on the wall of the hut. But he is there. No one has seen him for 15 years. But he is there. Tonight, the owner of this estate, the man named Stakovich, will call on that man in the cottage to kill him. 15 years ago tonight, it was different. There was laughter in this house.
That is a very amusing point of view, Sergei.
I don't think it's an amusing subject.
Well, our young lawyer speaks.
Tell us, Semyon. Why is it not an amusing subject? To take a man's life, that's murder.
Well, for the individual to do such a thing, yes, for the individual private citizen. But for the state to take a man's life, that is another matter. Now, are you going to try to tell us that when a criminal is convicted in a fair trial by a court of justice and is ordered to be hung by the Tsar's executioners, that is murder?
The state is not God, Stakovich. It has no right to take away something that it can't give back. And for that reason, I insist that it's wrong for the state to take away a man's life.
So, my friend, you would allow murderers to wander in the streets unmolested?
Well, there are prisons.
True, true. But is not the prison a means of taking away life? The result is the same. Execution kills instantly, imprisonment kills by degrees. Now, who is the more humane executioner? One who kills you in a few seconds,
or one who draws the life out of you incessantly for years.
Well, then they're both wrong. But if I were offered my choice between capital punishment and life imprisonment, I would certainly choose the prison. For it's better to live somehow than not to live at all.
Is life so priceless? 1,000 men take their own lives every day.
Well, then they're fools.
Perhaps not. You see, Simeon, I am a very wealthy man. If you were to ask me how many millions I am worth, I could not tell you. Everything which has meaning in my life has been purchased by these millions. My houses, my wardrobe, my carriages, my stables, the good food and drink you've enjoyed with me tonight. Now, take away my fortune, and I would as soon you took away my life as well.
I'm sorry for you.
Your empty talk about life in a prison. Now tell me, can you imagine what it's like? The dismal, dreary days, the nights without end, the gray walls blending into the gray earth and the gray sky. You would prefer such a life to the repose of the grave?
You speak as one who has seen the inside of a prison.
And you speak as one who has neither manners nor common sense.
Sorry.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I will bet 2 million rubles that you could not endure even 5 years in a prison cell.
Are you serious?
Perfectly.
If you mean this, seriously, I'll bet that I can stay in the confinement of a prison, not 5 years, but 15.
15?
Yes.
Done. I stake 2 millions, you stake your freedom.
Stankovich, this is absurd. This is insanity.
It's agreed. You stake 2 million rubles, I my freedom. If I remain confined in one room, a cell...
Completely alone, no one to see, no one to talk with...
In solitary confinement, then for 15 years, you will pay me 2 millions. Is that correct?
That's correct.
The most ridiculous bet I ever heard.
We're both gentlemen of honor. There's no need to put this in writing.
Sergei is our witness.
I want no part of this matter.
All right, now, here is how we do it. There is a brick hut at the foot of my garden. A one-room cottage where we keep some of the gardening tools. Now, this will be your prison.
Agreed.
You will be under strict observation. The door will not be locked. But if you so much as set one foot past the threshold, you shall have lost the bet.
Gentlemen, you cannot mean to go through with this.
Wait, I must have books, pen and ink, writing paper.
All right, all right. You may write letters, but you may not receive any in reply. No letters, no newspapers. You are not to see any living people. You are not to hear a human voice.
The terms are not so harsh in a prison.
However, he may have any books he wishes, whatever food he likes, a musical instrument, perhaps.
A piano. I should like a piano.
Granted.
But if I can speak with no one, how shall I make my wishes known?
Yes, I believe there is one window in the hut, yes, high up on the garden side. Now, you will write a note with your requests, leave it on the windowsill. The books you want, the food you wish, these will be left for you by my servants on the same windowsill.
When shall this begin?
Whenever you say.
As soon as possible. Midnight tomorrow night, the 19th of May. And at midnight on the 19th of May, 15 years hence, you will pay me 2 million rubles.
If you remain in confinement, which of course you will not.
Gentlemen, come to your senses. This is a joke, my friends. Let it pass as such.
No. I have made an agreement. I intend to abide by it.
No, seriously, Semyon, Sergei is right. This is foolishness. 2 millions is nothing to me, but you stand to lose 3 or 4 years of your life. Now, I say 3 or 4 because you'll never stick it out any longer. And don't forget, young fellow, that voluntary imprisonment is much harder to endure than forced imprisonment. You will be your own jailer. A simple muscular movement, a few footsteps, and you can be as free as any other man. Now, are you foolish enough to think that you could keep this bargain, even for 2 million rubles?
I shall be at the gardener's cottage 10 minutes before midnight tomorrow, according to the terms of the bet.
Why did I make this bet? What is the good? My young friend loses 15 years of his life and I throw away 2 millions. For what? Will it convince people that the gallows are any worse or better than imprisonment? No. No, it's all foolishness. On my part, it was the cruel joke of a well-fed man. On the part of my young friend, well, greed, I suppose. Greed for 2 million rubles.
Why did I make this bet? Well, the answer's simple. Is there anything a man in my position would not do for 2 million rubles? But no, it's not the money alone. It's not the promise of wealth and complete independence when I'm free again. It was a challenge that was beyond my power to refuse. Something enormous, something irresistible forced me to accept this bet.
The time, Sergei?
3 minutes until midnight.
3 minutes to live, Simeon. To see stars overhead, to smell the wind fresh off the meadow. 3 minutes and you go to your death. A slow, tortuous death in life. That little hut is going to be your grave, my young friend. But an open grave that you can leave any time and rejoin the living. You think you will refuse? You think you have the faintest chance of winning this bet?
The time. 2 minutes before midnight.
Simeon, consider, I am not pleading with you because I wish to save paying you 2 millions. That is only 2 grains in the sands of my fortune. But I cannot bear to be the instrument of this useless gesture. Simeon, how old are you? 30? 28? Or 29, more likely. 15 years from tonight, when you come out through that door, you will be past 40. And you will look... How do you think you will look, my friend?
1 minute? Less than that.
Wait! Simeon, I cannot let you do this thing. You are young and foolish, but you are my friend. If it's money you need, I will give you 20,000 rubles. 20,000, and we will forget this foolish bet, huh? 30,000. 30,000 if you will not go through that door. I cannot have it on my conscience. 30,000. 40. 50,000.
When the door closes behind him, and he looks at the four walls which will close him in, day and night, night and day, for 15 years. What does a man think about when the door closes behind him?
For Act Two of Charles Boyer's favorite story, The Bet, by Anton Chekhov. Dramatized and directed by Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee, and starring John Beale and William Conrad. What does a man think about when a prison door closes behind him? When he sees the four walls which will be the boundary of his world for 15 years, what does he think? Ivanov heard the door close, the latch snap, and then he felt nothing but numbness. He had sentenced himself. He had undertaken this fearful confinement as a bet. If he could last out 15 years, it would bring him 2 million rubles. 2 million rubles. What is 2 million rubles? He blew out his candle and felt his way along the brick wall to his bed. Fully clothed, he lay down and immediately fell asleep.
I awoke with a start. Daylight. I didn't know where I was. And then I remembered and began to take stock of my surroundings. A straw-filled mattress, a chair, a table, a bucket of water, and a piano. I'd never had time to learn to play. I could study now. Now I would have time to learn. I would send for a manual of the piano. I would teach myself. I placed a note high up on the window ledge and waited. Shortly it was drawn out of my sight by an unseen hand. And in due time, some food and a book appeared on a tray there on my windowsill. And I ate and then began practicing the chords and scales in the piano manual. And then I was terrified. The square of sunlight from my window, it scarcely moved. With all that had happened, my note, the breakfast, my clumsy fingering of the piano. Less than an hour had passed. Since I awoke, that patch of sunlight had moved less than 6 inches. That morning was the longest morning of my life.
And what do you hear from your guest at the bottom of the garden, Stokovich? Does he seem contented?
Here, read his notes.
My dear jailer, please send me coffee and gruel and a manual for the study of the pianoforte.
That was his first note 2 weeks ago.
You complied?
At once. Read some more.
My dear jailer, make me laugh. Send me a book which will make me laugh. How pitiful.
Yes. Read this. He sent it an hour ago.
Beg of you, dear jailer, when the servant brings my coffee tomorrow, let him say good morning. I must hear the sound of a human voice. Well, Stokovich, what will you do?
The prisoner will be served in silence. Those were the terms of the bet.
Just put the tray in my window. Say something. Speak to me. Say, here is your breakfast, Semyon Ivanov. Or just say, God be with you. Is that too much to ask? Curse me then. Only let me hear the sound of a human voice. I can hear a human voice. I can hear all the human voices I like. I have only to go to the door, touch the latch, step outside, and I'm as free as other men. I will! My fingers reached the latch, but I did not go out the door. Something stopped me. I went back to my piano. Hour after hour, for days and months on end, I sat at my piano keyboard until I knew I was master of the instrument. I sent for books till they were stacked to the ceiling of my cell. The great writing of all time. The philosophers, Aristotle, Socrates, Confucius. In the second year, I read 600 volumes. In the third year, I approached the realm of the natural sciences. Chemistry, biology, astronomy. I set about the study of languages. Latin, Greek, French, German, even Sanskrit, and Aramaic, and early Egyptian. These studies occupied 7 years of my confinement, so that no season which passed seemed half so long as that first morning in the gardener's cottage.
Oh, Sergei, I'm very glad to see you.
I came as quickly as I could, I will. What is wrong?
At a time such as this, a man needs someone to talk with. My friend, since sunrise this morning, I have lost 50 million rubles.
50 million rubles? How did it happen?
How? Small loss, I try to recover it with a larger investment, I lose again, double the stakes, and so on.
Did you lose?
Everything? No. No, Sergei, I have a few millions remaining.
What about the bet?
I can't afford to lose it now. I can only hope that my visitor at the foot of the garden will choose to escape before the 15th year. Either to escape or to die.
These events were not known to me, only guessed at. My books came in cheaper bindings,
The food was plain now. I could see the vines growing wild across my little square of sky. I became terribly depressed. My 10th year in that prison cell was a nightmare. My mind refused to grasp. My eyes refused to read. My tongue to taste. And my legs ached to walk a long distance. And then one day, I found on my windowsill a book I hadn't requested. The Holy Bible.
For 2 years, he has read nothing else.
You still supply whatever he asks for?
I place everything on his windowsill myself.
What of your servants?
I no longer keep any servants, Sergei. Things have gone very badly with me on the exchange. Still more losses.
And if you lose the bet?
I'm still a gentleman, a man of honor. I've given my word and I shall keep it. By selling all my property, even my clothing, I shall be able to raise 2 million rubles. There is the square of yellow light, crisscrossed with vines, like veins in the hand of an old woman. An hour from now it will be midnight, and he will have won the bet. An hour from now he will have 2 million rubles, and I will have the coat on my back. That is all. There is nothing left. The man must die. Semyon. Gone. He's gone.
No, my friend. I'm here at the piano. Put away your gun. It's not yet midnight. You haven't lost the bet. Not yet.
Semyon, I must tell you, I do not intend to lose it.
There is something I must say to you before this business is concluded. What music is appropriate? What shall I play? The Danse Macabre? In a few moments, unless you choose to put a bullet through my head, I shall be a millionaire twice over and a free man after 15 years in a solitary cell. These 15 years, I have studied earthly life. In your books, I have spanned continents, sung songs, hunted deer in the forests. Through the magic of your poets, beautiful women, like clouds, ethereal, have whispered wonderful tales to me that made my head spin. I have climbed to the summit of Mont Blanc and seen the sunrise and watched it turn the rim of the ocean red at twilight. I saw from there how lightning cleaved the clouds. I saw green forests, fields, rivers, lakes, cities. In your books, I cast myself into the emptiness of space, worked miracles, preached new religions, all inside this prison cell. The sum total of human thought is compressed into a little lump in my skull, and I despise your way of life. Everything in your existence is void, frail, a mirage. You have taken falsehood for truth, ugliness for beauty. As I read your books, I am appalled at how you could have traded heaven for earth. And to show you my contempt for what you live by, I hereby give up my claim to the 2 million rubles.
What?
I give up this fortune, which I once considered paradise, by leaving this cell at 5 minutes before midnight. Isn't that the time now?
Yes. Yes, 5 minutes before midnight.
Then I shall wish you good night, my dear Jane. And may God be with you.
I brushed by him on the path.
Yes.
But it is not yet midnight. You are saved. You're still a rich man. Laugh, my friend. You've won the bet.
I'm not sure, Sergei. Whether I've won or lost.
You have the answer. Did the man named Stakovich win or lose? At any rate, the bet is a great story. Our thanks to John Beale and William Conrad for their performances, to Claude Sweeten and Dr. Samuel Hoffman, who supplied the unusual music, and to Charles Boyer, who chose Chekhov's moving yarn as his favorite story. Next week, we're presenting an old American favorite, probably the most popular one-act play ever written, The Valiant. You probably played in it yourself at high school or college. And it's the particular selection of one of America's favorite personalities, Bob Hope. We have an unusual cast in this moving story of a condemned man. We hope you'll be listening.
Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents transcribed A Murderous Revision, the story about a man who made a recording of a violent death, starring Mr. Richard Widmark.
Hi, Hap. Meet the team.
Where?
Why, right under your car's hood, Hap. The Autolite electrical system. The family team of precision-made units, including the coil, distributor, starting motor, and the other parts that make up the complete Autolite electrical system. Used as original factory equipment on many leading makes of our finest cars, trucks, and tractors.
Well, what does this team do, Harlow?
Why, Hap, it goes to work for you every time you press the starting switch, sound your horn, or play your radio.
The Autolite electrical system does all that, huh, Harlow?
Right, Hap, because all its units are related like a family team by Autolite engineering design and manufacturing skill for the smoothest performance money can buy. So, friends, when your Autolite-equipped car needs replacement parts, insist on Autolite original factory parts, because from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with A Murderous Revision and the performance of Mr. Richard Widmark, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
Yeah? What did you want to see me for?
Oh, Chris. Come in, sit down.
Did you get to hear the show Sunday?
I don't like to listen to the show.
Oh, why not?
Because I don't, that's all.
Hey, Mr. Goodwin, I put some zip in that closing scene. I want you to hear it. Got the playback ready. Now, hand me that record marked part two, will you? Thanks. I don't know, Chris. I don't make you come to rehearsals. You don't have to sit in the control room all day. The least you can do is listen to the show at home. Well, listen to this now.
George. Honest, I didn't mean it, George.
Get this, Chris. Get this.
Do you mean to say that you didn't really mean it when you told my brother you didn't love him? You forget, Doris, that I heard you every word while I was hiding behind the Davenport the night my mother was here.
George, I beg you, don't do this thing. Put down the gun, George.
Now, this is only what you deserve. You tricked me for the last time, Doris. You tricked me for the last time.
What did you change it for? What was wrong with the ending the way it was? Why did you change it?
Now, just take it easy, Chris. I'll tell you why I changed it. Because it was wordy and repetitious. It didn't tell the story. The boys upstairs...
The boys upstairs. Yeah, that's just what I thought. The boys upstairs. They do everything but breathe for you. Did it ever occur to you that maybe people are wordy and repetitious?
Chris, I'm trying to tell you the scene the way you wrote it
just didn't play. Yeah, that's right. All the trade cliches, drag them out. It didn't live. It didn't play. It didn't make the right goosebumps come out on your left elbow. How did you ever get into this business? Whoever let you into a radio studio?
I'll tell you what's wrong with you. What you need is a good psychiatrist.
Don't you tell me I need a psychiatrist.
Let go of me. I said let go. Why, you're nuts.
Now, you listen to me, you. For 2 years now, I've turned out a murder a week for you, week in and week out. A murder a week. I eat murder, I talk murder, I dream murder. And for what? Every time I turn in a decent script, you chop the heart out of it.
Your contract's up next week, Chris. You've got only one more script to do. Well, write it and get out.
You get better than a script. You'll get everything you deserve. I'm going to show you what a real murder sounds like. I'm going to show you if I have to kill you to do it.
Good evening. This is a recording of an actual murder. The first, as far as I know. Not written, not rehearsed, but well planned. It is respectfully dedicated to Mr. Ken Avery, editor and producer of the radio program, Murder, Please. This is my last show, Mr. Avery. I'm delivering it to you in its entirety. Cast, music, everything. The events and persons are absolutely real. It's going to be a great show, Mr. Avery. You'll hear everything but the climax. I'm speaking into a microphone concealed in my desk, concealed with the other recording equipment I've rented for the occasion. The music you hear is coming from a high-fidelity phonograph at my side. This program is produced, edited, directed, narrated, engineered, and plotted by Christopher Turner, whose only claim to immortality is this single half hour. And now, Mr. Avery, the leading characters in order of appearance. The murderer, Christopher Turner. The catalytic agent, your daughter Lois. The victim, yourself. And now, please to begin. Murder, Please.
Hello?
Hello, Ken. This is Chris.
Oh, now listen,
I hate to
Chris.
Bother you at home, but I wanted to apologize for the way I acted. Could you drop over to my office right away?
Sorry, Chris. No go. I put up with your little insanities for 2 years now. Temper tantrums, insults, coming in stewed to the gills. 2 years of that was plenty.
I see. You won't change your mind.
Not a chance. Maybe you can find somebody more patient than I am. Good luck.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks a lot. Lovely opening scene, Mr. Avery. Thank you. You did exactly what I wanted you to do. You just threw away your last chance to save your life. Good work, an excellent performance. Well, if you won't come up to my office by invitation, which I suspected you wouldn't, there's still another way. The telephone book. Listen, Mr. Avery. The sound of the flipping pages. Your daughter's phone number. Yeah, here we are. Hello, Lois. It's been a long time. Bet you don't even know who this is.
I don't recognize the voice.
This is Christopher Turner.
Oh, sure, Mr. Turner. How are you?
Fine, just fine. Well, how do you like living alone?
It's all right, I guess.
Rather be living with the folks?
No. It's kind of independent this way.
Yeah. How's the writing coming?
Not so good, Mr. Turner. I've written 5 scripts so far, and every one of them has been rejected. I don't know what's the matter.
Well, the reason I called was your dad and I had a talk this afternoon about you. He thought maybe I could pass on a few tips.
Oh, I wouldn't want to bother you.
Oh, now, this isn't an obligation on my part, Lois. I like to help young people. Say, what are you doing this evening?
Well...
You see, here's the point, Lois. This is the only free night I'll have this week. Things are sort of piling up. And maybe you're doing some little thing with your writing that I could straighten out in an evening.
Well, all right, Mr. Turner.
Good. You know where my office is?
I don't think so.
It's right across from the broadcasting studios, the Brown Building, room 208.
I'll be right over.
Fine. And bring your scripts with you, huh?
I will. I certainly appreciate this.
Not at all. Bye.
Bye.
I'll be right over and bring your scripts with you. I certainly appreciate this. Not at all. You see, that's how people talk, Mr. Avery. Let's see, what else? Oh, yes, sound. Drawer opens. Gun taken out. Click of breech. Whirl of chamber. Bullets inserted in chamber. 3, 4, 5, and 6. Gun in drawer. Drawer closed. And now we must wait. You see, Mr. Avery? Fate is a better dramatist than either of them. Just when things start getting dull, the phone rings. Hello?
Hello, Chris. Hank.
Oh, what's up?
I tried your place all night. I tried your sister's place. Finally, I called your office. I wouldn't let myself believe it, but here you are, slaving away for old man Avery again. Say, when are you going to tell him to go take a flying leap?
I did that just today.
No kidding?
Yes.
Well, congratulations. From here on in, nothing but bigger and better things.
Yeah.
Say, there's a rip-roaring poker game going on over here. Just room for one more sucker. What do you say?
No, I can't tonight. I'm doing my last show.
Oh, forget it for one night. Why don't you? Live a little.
Thanks, Hank, but I can't.
I'm coming over and get you away from that typewriter if I have to use force.
No, I can't, Hank. The show's Sunday.
Look, I got a script due tomorrow. You don't see me knocking myself out. Let him wait.
Listen, Hank, you can't come over here. Don't you get it?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chris, honest. If I'd suspected. Sure thing. Well, take it easy. Call me for lunch or something.
You bet.
Sorry, boy. Bye.
Bye. Whew, that was close. Good scene, though. Lois Avery has just driven up in front of the building. She's getting out of the car, carrying her scripts. She wears a cardigan sweater, tweed skirt, flat shoes. She's young, she's very pretty. A girl with everything to live for. Now she's disappeared into the building. In a moment, she'll knock on my door. And then you'll see for yourself how youth resists the threat of death. And this, Mr. Avery, would be the proper dramatic moment to end Act One.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Richard Widmark in A Murderous Revision, tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hey, Hap, better turn on your lights.
Presto, and they're on.
Thank you, and thank Autolite.
Why, Harlow?
Because in your Autolite-equipped car, the lights, as well as the power for your radio and power to crank your motor, are all provided by the Autolite electrical system.
It has to be good, huh, Harlow?
You bet, Hap. And that's why complete Autolite electrical systems are used as original factory equipment on many leading makes of our finest cars, trucks, and tractors.
And that's good enough for me, Harlow.
You bet it's good, Hap. And that's why it pays to treat your car's electrical system to a periodic checkup at your authorized Autolite service station or the dealer who services your make of car. You can quickly locate your nearest authorized Autolite service station in the classified section of your telephone directory, or by calling Western Union by number and asking for Operator 25. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Richard Widmark in Elliot Lewis's production of A Murderous Revision, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Act Two. This is Christopher Turner once again, Mr. Avery, bringing you by transcription the first recording of an actual murder ever made specifically for broadcast. The setting? My office. The music? Recorded. The time? Night. The victim? Yourself. Your daughter has just entered the building. And so concludes the usual resume with which we begin the second act of every Murder Please program. I hear footsteps in the hall. Your cue, Lois. Sound, knock on door.
Come in. Hi, Lois. Come on in.
Thanks. I brought the scripts with me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Sit down.
I hope I'm not putting you out. I always tell Dad to stop imposing on my behalf, but I guess he'll never learn.
Now, look, you're here because I want you here, and for no other reason. Cigarette?
No, thanks. This is a nice office.
It serves. Just a hole in the wall, but quiet, nothing fancy.
I like it.
Well, how long have you been scribbling?
6 months, Mr. Turner.
Let's just make it Chris. Hmm? What sort of things?
Murder, mostly. Somebody told me that's what sells best.
True, true. Well, let's just start talking about murder. Maybe something interesting will come out. Question number one. Why do you think people kill?
Lots of reasons, I guess. Money. Love. Revenge.
Not really. Only for survival. They kill for money only when money means life. Their idea of life. They only kill for love when life depends upon that love. They only kill for revenge when life is intolerable without it. You see?
That's very interesting.
Could you kill?
I don't think so.
Well, maybe you could. Here. See?
A gun.
And loaded.
Please put it away.
Take it.
No, I'd rather not.
It's very obedient. It won't fire unless you press the trigger. Take it. That's it. Now point it at me.
Please, I...
Think now, think. One touch of your finger and you kill me. One little touch. A very delicate instrument to trigger. There's a sense of power there, you feel it?
I'm afraid.
Fear, yes, but exhilaration, too. Like the second drink.
I feel it, yes.
Yeah. All right, you can give it back to me now. Well, so much for the murderer. Now, what about the victim? Afraid of death?
Sometimes.
What is death to you?
Death?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No idea?
Emptiness? Blackness? Nothing?
Is that so terrible?
Yes, because you really don't know.
Like the dark.
That's it.
Do you know any more about death than you do about me?
You?
Yeah.
Well, I know you work for Dad.
Yes, but you've never even spent 1 hour with me. Once at lunch, you and your father sat down with me, yet you come up here alone. How do you know you can trust me?
I suppose I don't, really.
Look at this.
Please put it down. It makes me terribly nervous.
Do you have any money?
A little.
How much?
$10, maybe, some change.
Give it to me.
Here.
Why did you give me the money?
Because you asked me for it.
No, because you were hoping I'd put down the gun. And if I'd said, a kiss, one kiss, and I'll put down the gun, what would you do?
I suppose I'd give...
But a kiss, that would be harder to give, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Kiss me.
There.
Thank you.
Now put down the gun, please. I know it's a lesson in writing and all that, but it scares me.
No.
But you said you would.
I said nothing of the kind. And if I had said it, you'd have been foolish to believe me. You can't trust a man with a gun. You feel helpless, don't you?
Yes.
While you could give me money, there was hope. While you could give me love, there was hope. But if all I wanted was revenge, there'd be nothing you could do to save yourself.
Nothing.
And if I told you that right now, right this moment, I'm going to pull this trigger and blow you to bits, tell me, what would you say?
I'd try to talk you out of it.
What would you say?
I wouldn't know what to say.
Then I'd shoot.
I'd tell you about the electric chair.
Very little threat to a man about to kill. Later, maybe, when he's running away, then he'd think about consequences, but not now. Now it's only kill. Now what else? What else would you say?
I'd beg him.
He wouldn't listen.
I'd plead with him. I'd say, please don't kill me.
And if he still wouldn't listen?
Then I'd die.
Hello.
Bet you don't know who this is.
I can't place the voice.
Try.
I haven't the slightest idea.
Remember San Francisco and the Italian pizza and the cigarette holder?
Vaguely. Who is this? I hate guessing games.
Harriet.
I know at least 18 Harriets. Harriet who?
Crawford.
Oh.
I just came in. I thought maybe you could meet me for a drink. I don't know a single solitary soul in town.
How did you happen to call here?
Well, I shouldn't tell, I suppose, but Hank said you were working late at the office.
Hank, huh?
He gave me the number and said to be sure to call.
Bless his heart.
What was that?
I said, bless his heart.
Yeah. Well, I'll call you tomorrow.
Yeah, you do that.
Well, bye.
Guess I'd better get going.
Why? We're not even started yet.
Well, if you don't put down that gun, I'm going. I don't like it.
Sit down. I want to tell you a story.
Now listen.
Please. Please sit down. Now this is just a sample plot. You can have it if you want it. It's about a writer who had great novels in him, great plays. But he was broke. So for the sake of a place to stay and a meal to eat, he started turning out radio mysteries. He turned them out until every drop of originality was squeezed out of him. And all the greatness he might have been ate into him because he'd leave nothing to the world, nothing but scripts to be swept up by studio janitors after the broadcast. Well, the writer made his decision one day. He'd do a last radio play, a radio play with an actual murder, the only chance he had for permanent survival. And he selected as his victim the man who had ground him into the dust. He selected his editor and producer, Ken Avery.
Please.
I like you. I like you very much. I wish this could be happening to almost anyone but you. Get to the phone.
What?
The telephone.
What for?
You're going to call your father.
No. No, I won't do it.
You'll call your father and you'll tell him to come up to my office. Now pick up the receiver. No, wait. I'll do it. Now, take the phone. Tell him. It's ringing. Take it.
Hello? Hello?
Dad?
Lois? Lois, what are you calling this time of night for? Something the matter?
No, nothing.
You want him to take you home, and you don't feel well.
Lois, something's the matter. Where are you? You home?
No, I'm at Mr. Turner's.
Turner's? His apartment?
His office. I don't feel very well.
Come and take me home.
Come and take me home. I don't feel well.
Here, give me the phone. Hello, Ken.
Yes, Chris?
Yeah, Lois came up tonight to discuss some scripts she wrote, but she doesn't feel very well. You'd better come and get her.
I'll be right over.
Sit down. We haven't got very long to wait. Twenty minutes have gone by. I hear the steps in the hall. The sure, plodding steps of her father, Mr. Ken Avery. The climax, ladies and gentlemen, of the listening audience I address to you. Mr. Avery will never hear this portion of the entertainment. Come in.
Lois, are you? What is this?
Sit down. There's a chair reserved for you.
Lois, what's been going on here?
Tell him, Lois.
He's going to kill you. He's going to kill both of us.
Close the door.
Chris, put that thing down. Somebody's liable to get hurt. What's the matter with you? Drinking again?
Nothing to drink. Very sober. Sit down.
Chris, are you crazy?
Good line. Perfectly in character. The inane cliche from the mouth of the great producer. You see, Ken, everything is being recorded right now. Your voice, Lois's, mine. Sit down.
Recorded for what?
For posterity, for the show next week. You'll have the honor of appearing on your own program as the murder victim. Here, let me show you. Right here in the desk. You see, it's a recording machine. I've stopwatched every second. It's been running exactly 25 minutes. You always made it a rule to plan the climax for 26:30 so you could have room for a final commercial. Well, that's just what I'm doing. According to my timing, you have about 1 minute and 30 seconds to live.
All right, Chris. That's enough of the phony dramatics. Now, give me that thing before somebody gets hurt.
Stand back. I wouldn't want to mistime the climax of the show.
This won't make a show.
You won't have much editorial power, Mr. Avery, after a few seconds.
There's the agency. They wouldn't put this thing on the air.
No, why not?
You planned to kill me.
From the beginning.
There's the trouble right there, Chris. There's no twist.
Oh, yes, the twist.
Right. The surprise ending. You told the audience to expect the murder to be successful. But our shows have to have some kind of surprise for the audience, Chris. You know that. Where's the twist?
Still the editor right to death's door. All right, Ken, perhaps you can provide the surprise ending that's going to save your life.
I don't have to.
Oh?
You provided the twist yourself, but you didn't know it. And yet the twist was part of the story all the time.
Where, Mr. Editor Avery?
You, Chris, you're the twist.
Me?
That's right. You're a flop, Chris. You're so used to dreaming on paper, you can't live anymore. You wrote about love because you never had it. You wrote about fortunes, and you're still two bits. You wrote about murder, but you haven't got the guts to pull the trigger. Now, give me that gun.
You think I won't shoot?
I know you won't. Give me that gun, you hack.
What did you say?
I said you were a hack. Now, give me that gun.
Stay away!
Give me that gun, you hack!
No, I'm not!
Dan!
Let go! Let go of my hand.
Drop it, I said. Drop it.
Let go.
Chris. Chris.
You always like to change the ending.
Dad.
It's all right, Lois.
Dad, take me home.
The records. They're all we have to clear us.
Take me home, please.
As soon as I see what's on those records. Oh, this must be part one. Let's see.
Good evening. This is a recording of an actual murder. The first, as far as I know. Not written, not rehearsed.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Richard Widmark.
Friends, this is Harlow Wilcox again to remind you that Autolite is the world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. In 28 plants from coast to coast, Autolite makes over 400 products for cars, trucks, tractors, planes, and boats. These include complete electrical systems, a complete line of ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs, both standard and resistor types, Autolite batteries, including the famous Autolite Stay Full. Autolite also makes automotive wire and cable, bumpers and hubcaps, electric windshield wipers, and many more. All are backed by constant Autolite research and are precision built to highest standards of quality and performance. So remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
Next week on Suspense, our star will be Mr. Victor Mature as a man who made his living as an assassin, a tale we call Black Jack to Kill. In weeks to come, we shall also present Mr. John Hodiak and Mr. Herbert Marshall, all on Suspense. Suspense is produced and transcribed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. A Murderous Revision was adapted for Suspense by David Ellis from a story of S. Lee Pagostin. In tonight's story, Kathy Lewis was heard as Lois, Joseph Kearns as Ken, Charlotte Lawrence as Harriet, and Jerry Hausner as Hank.
Tonight's appearance of Richard Widmark was made possible through the kind permission of 20th Century Fox Studios. Mr. Widmark may soon be seen in the Technicolor production, Red Skies of Montana.
For the location of your nearest Autolite service station or your nearest Autolite spark plug or battery dealer, phone Western Union by number and ask for Operator 25. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from favorite stories, suspense, past episodes of this show, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll find our Shoutcast stream there as well, and a link to our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make all of this possible. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.